Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, good evening, everybody around the globe. It's Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. That means it's time for an episode of Stunt Tracks. Yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the one and only Leslie Hoffman. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
Oh, I'm doing okay, and the snow finally disappeared. And supposedly no snow in the future forecast, at least.
I know, it's amazing. I just last week we were talking about taking the snow tires off your car, and now it's going to be close to almost in the mid 70s this weekend. Wow.
That's
how
what I hear.
Change.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. I'll take it though. It's better than the snow. Much better than the snow.
Definitely better than the snow. I mean, I still say, even with the two snows that we had in the last 4 weeks or whatever time period it was, actually, I think we had a very short winter this year, or a mild one.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, we had all of our snow dumped on us at one time, instead of spread out through the whole winter. So it seemed like it was worse because we got dumped on so much at one given time.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. No, I'm used, as you said, or normal winter is like it snows every day, or it's so sub-zero that actually there are no clouds in the sky, and I mean, it could easily be 20 below zero here. So I guess that's why I'm saying it was a mild winter. I mean, there were some cold days, but on the whole, I mean, it seemed like it started and ended. But then it seemed like it wanted to try at least twice to start up again.
Yep. I think it's gone for good, though, until next
yeah.
year.
Well, I hope so.
Did you finally get your snow tires off your car?
Oops. Wait a minute. Did I finally get your... Oh. I thought I told you this last week, is that I actually switched the snow tires before the first unusual snow. So I was back in my all-weather summer tires, and then it snowed, and then it snowed again.
Oh, God, I just love the winters up here in New England in the Northeast, huh?
Yeah, I mean...
So unpredictable.
Well, yeah, and then, I'll just say, the first snow was like a fluffy snow, but this second snow that we just had was like this really wet, heavy snow. And it didn't freeze to my windshield, but it was heavy enough that the wipers, you know, the first snow, the wipers just wiped the snow off. The second snow that we had, I guess cars have a, I don't know what to call it, a safety thing that it doesn't burn out your motor or something, is that, you know, I turned on the windshield wipers, and they moved about half an inch, and then it said, and then they said, forget it, we're not moving. So I had to get out with the brush, and it was about 3 to 4 inches, but it really was a heavy snow. I mean, like I say, too heavy for the windshield wipers to just push it off the windshield.
Yeah, it was. I'm glad it's gone, though. I'm glad it's gone. Summer is finally here. So I wanted to let you guys know that I start camp again next weekend. And usually what happens when I go to camp is we move the show to the week, Monday or Tuesday, and then we come back to Sundays again once I close down camp. But it's a lot to do so many different podcasts during the week now. And so we're gonna this will be our last Stunt Treks until the end of the summer, till after Labor Day. After Labor Day. I'll still be doing Trek Talking on Thursday nights, but that'll be the only podcast that will be going on. Will be Trek Talking on Thursday night. The only time that might change would be if we have a guest speaker or somebody scheduled and they can't be with us on Thursday due to time, you know, changes or whatever. We might have to move the show to a different day or a different hour, but Trek Talking will stay on Thursday night at 7:30, and Stunt Trek will pick up again once the summer ends. Leslie and I will be back at it again every Sunday night, and we'll be talking about Planet of the Apes, Star Trek, who knows what, snow, the weather, anything. But you can still visit Leslie at the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page, and we'll still be around. I'll still be talking with Leslie and seeing what's going on with Leslie. We just won't be here with you guys on Sunday night. So I just want to let you guys know that everything is fine. Leslie's fine. I'm fine. It's just a lot to do all during the week. Get prepared for camp, you know, do my other podcast, do this one. It's a lot. So we're just going to be on hiatus for a little while, taking a break. So don't worry. Uncle Jim and the Leslie Hoffman will be back after Labor Day. So mark your calendars. We'll have a great show when we come back, and it'll be a lot of fun. We'll make it worth the wait. How's that sound? So we're going to be talking tonight. I was talking with Leslie about, you know, what do we want to do for the show tonight? And last week was George Takei's 84th birthday. So I decided, I said to Leslie, well, do you have any stories about George? And Leslie said, oh, absolutely. And I said, well, so do I. So we're going to talk a little bit about George and some of our experiences with him at conventions and other things. And we're just going to hang out and talk about Mr. Sulu tonight. So if you guys have a story that you'd like to share about George, give us a call. Our phone line is 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. We'll be live with you guys here for about another 45 minutes or so. So give us a call and share your stories about George. He's a great guy. He's been on the convention circuit, well, since the first convention way back in New York City in the early 70s, I believe that convention was. And speaking of that first convention, I believe that Leslie posted a picture on the Facebook page, and she attended that first convention. Correct, Leslie?
second convention, but yes, I went down to New York City. Well, I think we've talked about this in the past, is that, I mean, nowadays people just think horror conventions, sci-fi conventions, Star Trek conventions. I really believe it was Star Trek that started these celebrity conventions or television show conventions.
You're absolutely right. Back in the 70s, Star Trek, I think what kept Star Trek alive, and I think what helped make Star Trek so popular and make it what it is today, is the conventions. And the actors would go to all these conventions and meet the fans and hang out with the fans and talk to the fans. And it gave the fans, well, I know in my case, I can't speak for everybody, but it gave you a person, you felt personally connected with the show because you met the people. You met George, you met Walter and Michelle and Jimmy. And so when you saw them on TV or you saw them in the movies, you kind of had a personal connection because you met them and you had memories about hanging out with them at the bar or at the hotel or the restaurant or whatever. And that's something you don't get with movie stars like Burt Reynolds and Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone and things like that. You might love their movies and stuff, but you never met them. So they're nothing more than an image on the screen, but that's not the case with Star Trek. And I think that's what made Star Trek what it is today, was the availability of the actors to hang out with the fans. And you got to know these people on a personal level. Would you agree, Leslie?
Yes, absolutely. I think the way you described it is absolutely perfect, is that, I don't know, this name just popped into my head, but exactly what you're saying is that, okay, you've seen John Wayne movies, but you never met the man. I mean, you might have loved him in the films that he did, but you never had a personal contact with him. Now, with Star Trek, as you say, with the conventions, I mean, here's Captain Kirk, here's Sulu, here's, Chekhov. I mean, you're actually, how do I say it? Is that you're seeing the character, even though you're really seeing the actor, but as you say, you're actually, you're actually experiencing the real thing. It's not just an image you're looking at. You're looking at the human being now. You're talking to the human being now.
Yeah, it's something that was very special and very unique to Star Trek. I think what happened, and now this is just, again, my personal this isn't a fact. But Star Trek conventions were huge in the 70s. They were gigantic in the 80s when TNG came out. They were huge. And then into the 90s, and then they started to fade off. And I think, and this is my opinion, and please don't, anyone that's listening, don't take this the wrong way. Because I was running my own Star Trek conventions in the mid-90s. And I think what happened was people wanted to have conventions, but Star Trek had become so popular and so many conventions. There was literally a convention every single weekend. I mean, there were times when I had to decide, well, do I want to go down to Buffalo and see Michael Dorn? Do I want to go up to Syracuse and see Jonathan Frakes? Do I want to go down to Connecticut and see Patrick Stewart? I mean, every weekend you had to pick, where you wanted to go. There were so many. And what ended up happening was the actors started raising their prices because there was such a demand for them. And as their prices started to go up and up and up, conventions were looking for ways to have a cheaper convention. So they started getting people from Doctor Who, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, you know, a lot of the old TV shows from the 70s that weren't on anymore because those actors were cheaper than and weren't in as much of a demand as the TNG actors and the TOS actors who were by this time making movies. So you started
There were guest stars. Well, if you want to call them guest stars, there were guests that actually would pay their own way and pay for a table to be at these conventions because they were hoping that, okay, you know, William Shatner is going to be there. So if I fly out there and if I have a table, you know, maybe I can make some sales too. But again, you kind of hit on it. You didn't say the name that shall not be name, but I'll say it, is I say creation was part of the destruction of conventions.
Oh, I wasn't going to say that. I was staying away from that, but you're absolutely right. The stories that I could tell you about what creations did to me as a fan convention would make you cry. And just to give you an example, I'm not going to name any names in this example, but I had scheduled a Star Trek convention in 1992 in Albany, New York, and I had signed a particular be there. Creations turned around and said to this guest star that I already had a contract with, look, we will pay you twice as much money to do a convention the same weekend in Syracuse, New York, instead of Albany, New York. And the actor agreed to that. I got a call from their manager saying that they had backed out due to a professional conflict, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I had to do some fancy
yeah,
footwork.
Yeah, the conflict was about $5,000 or
something. It's exactly what it was. That's the exact amount. And I made a few phone calls, and I got a phone call back from the manager saying, oh, well, so-and-so has reconsidered, and they're going to do your show in Albany instead. So that was the kind of thing that they were doing. And unfortunately, what was happening was so-and-so would be offered $5,000 more money than I offered them to do a convention. So next time they did a convention, their price just went up by $5,000. And that snowball of a monster was created by creations. They created that.
Well, creations somehow had either they were part of Paramount or they had a deal with Paramount. So you haven't touched on this part either, is that creation would actually have their name on an actor's picture or an item that was being sold. And if you had a convention that did not have the word creation on it, they would come into that convention and confiscate those pictures or whatever you may have had at, not you personally, but at a convention. That's the stories I've heard.
No, they were terrible. They were terrible. But what ended up happening is that the Star Trek actors got to a point where they were so expensive that people were bringing in, you know, the Jawa from Star Wars, the Tusken Raider from Star Wars. They were bringing in, you know, Richard Hatch from Battlestar Galactica. And they were bringing in other actors because they were so much cheaper. And what ended up happening is what we have right now. There's no more Star Trek conventions. They don't exist. Now everything is a multimedia convention and not Star Trek, and that saddens me greatly because nothing was better than going to a Star Trek convention and hanging out for a weekend with a bunch of Trek heads. It was heaven. It was total heaven. And there's so many people today that will never, ever experience that because it doesn't exist. It's sad.
Yes, sadly it doesn't. I mean, I'll do one final story is a person that we actually had on Stunt Trek that was talking to us he went to a creation convention, and he had a question about Star Trek, and he goes up to, you know, one of the, I don't know what you would call it, people running the show, and he asks them the question about Star Trek, and the answer he got was, I don't know.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
You know, if it's a Star Trek convention, you would hope that the people, whether they were the volunteers, whether they were running the show, would have some idea of who they're promoting.
Well, I do want to say there is a very, very small Star Trek convention in upstate New York in Ticonderoga called Trekconderoga. They do it around August, and that's where I met Leslie. No, I think I met Leslie. Well, Leslie's been there. I'm not sure if that's where I met her or not, but Leslie's been there. And they have it at the Ticonderoga High School. It's a very, very small convention, a couple of hundred people, maybe, Leslie, 200 or 300, would you say?
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, as you say, very small.
It's very, very small, but it's very personal. And it's Star Trek only. So, you know, I like to go up to it every year. We haven't been one because of COVID. But I go up there as a Klingon and, you know, do Trek talking interviews and things of that nature. And I'll hang out up there for the weekend and just have some fun with the Star Trek fans. But it's very small, very low-key. And so if you're looking for something like that, keep that in the back of your mind. It's all Star Trek, which is really fun. And you can get it, you can hang out with me. You can meet Uncle Jim. I might even let you touch my bat lip if you're really nice. So,
excuse me? I don't know. Can you say that on this show?
Yeah.
Hey, baby,
did.
You want to touch my bat lip?
I'll whip out my bat lip. And, you know, people always want to touch it, and they always want to get a picture
yeah,
of
no,
it. It's
I
not
don't.
As nice as Leslie's. Leslie has a real bat lip. Mine is just a prop. But at any rate, it's a lot of fun up there. It's very, very small. There's not much in Ticonderoga, but it's fun. And you can go and tour the original set series tour as well, which is, I think, the major attraction. But it's a lot of fun, and it's only Star Trek. You won't see Marvel superheroes there. You won't see anybody there from Star Wars. It's all Star Trek. So it's a lot of fun. I enjoy it. Like I said, it's very, very small, very small. They have it in the Ticonderoga High School, which is odd, but it's fun. I can't say any more about it really than that. It's small, and it's fun. Anyways, I don't know, has George been up there? I know Walter and Michelle were there, what, 2 years ago or 3 years ago?
Oh, boy. I don't know if he
was
up there for a convention, but that's one of my stories is that he actually was on an episode of when James Colley was making fan films, New Voyages, he was in an episode of World Enough in Time. And that was another guest that we've had on the show before is John Lim, was being Sulu at a younger age, and George was on the set, you know, being the real Sulu. Or the older Sulu.
The old Sulu. The old Sulu and the young Sulu.
The original Sulu. I shouldn't say young and
That's
old.
Right. That's right. Because who is it? John Chow? Is it John Chow that does Sulu in the Kelvin Universe movies? I think that's who does them. But anyways.
Oops, wait a
minute. Listen, we have to take
Lim.
A very quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be sharing some stories about George. Don't touch that dial.
Trek Talking all things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday nights, 7:30 to 9:30, all hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back. Uncle Jim, D. Leslie Hoffman. We're talking about George Sulu Takei. So, Leslie, you have some stories to share about the man himself?
We kind of quickly went over it, but I'll go back and just flesh it out. Is that so in the early 70s, the second Star Trek convention was held in New York City. And actually, I'm surprised that my parents were willing to let me go down to New York City. That's 300 miles south of Saranac Lake. But somehow they let me go. And, I mean, it again, this is only the second convention, should I say, in the world that was Star Trek. And it was so amazing to walk into the room with other Trekkies. I mean, the love of the show, the people, you know, knew everything about Star Trek back then, the original one, TOS. And back then, there weren't bodyguards and this and that, and you got to stand in line, and, well, obviously you had to stand in line to get up to the whoever you were trying to see, but, you know, it was much more relaxed than, I'll say, recent conventions that I was at. And again, I guess, how do you say it? Is that, like you say, it was a new experience for both sides of the table, not only for, you know, like you say, the guest stars, but the fans that were coming up to see the guests. So it wasn't like, next, okay, sign the picture, next, sign the picture, sign. You know, they were probably just as excited to come and talk to the fans. And I remember George just being really nice, and the picture that you're talking about, you know, I brought a camera down and someone took a picture of me with George. And you know, I mean, nowadays, if you did something like that, there are some guest stars that will say, okay, if you're going to take a picture of me, you know, you and me together, it's going to cost $50 to, you know, I mean, I guess I should, we've already been through that. The bottom line was, in the 70s, you went up to George, you talked to him, he was really nice, you wanted a picture with him. He sat there, he smiled, you know, and it was an absolutely wonderful experience. And, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm getting old and the brain is getting atrophied, but I also just posted this pamphlet or this booklet that they made. That they handed out, you know, when you paid your, I mean, obviously there was a fee to get into the convention, but there was no fee to see the guest stars. So it was really nice. And that, like I say, that was the 70s. Then, you know, my story happens then in the 90s. The unbelievable experience of being part of Star Trek. I mean, when I was taking that picture with George, who would have known that, let's see, what would it be, 20 years later, that I'd be working on Deep Space Nine and Voyager. I mean, you know, you just don't think about the future that way, or how can you predict the future that way?
Now, Leslie, speaking of Voyager, did you happen to work on the episode Flashback where George came back and was on the show?
Unfortunately, no. I wasn't on that show, so I never did get to work with him on set at Paramount. But then later, you kind of talked. Well, you went all the way to the convention part. But before Ticonderoga had conventions, they were doing fan films, and like you say, George was asked to be in one of the fan film episodes, World Enough in Time, and I don't remember who contacted me. I assume it was James Colley, but there was a sword fight in the episode. And so my stunt friend, Tom Morgan, and I went over to George's house. And for those who don't know, George is married to a man named Brad Altman. So like you say, we went over to their house and we worked out a routine that we felt would be easy enough for George to do and also James to do. You know, it couldn't be anything too dangerous. All I need to do is have one of them stick the other one in the eye with the sword, and that would not have been a good thing. Anyways,
no.
So we were practicing that in Los Angeles. What I used to do was when James was doing these fan films, Ticonderoga is about an hour and a half away from Saranac Lake. So I would plan a visit back to see my parents, and then, you know, I would drop down to Ticonderoga for a day or something, you know, just to say hi to people. But in this case, you know, I was on the set for the sword fight, which was kind of interesting because one of the things is they wanted him to have a cape on while doing the sword fight. And the thing is that the script says that he pulls the sword from his back, you know, that the sword, it's not like one that you have in your waist. It's somehow he's pulling the sword from behind himself. Well, you can't be wearing a cape and pulling a sword out of a hilt. So, you know, anyways, we got that taken care of. But the interesting thing was before we left the house, Brad took me aside and asked me if I could be George's bodyguard, or could you keep an eye on George that, you know, that he's being taken care of. I mean, Brad was very concerned about George, and I said yes, you know. So you know, I flew back to see my parents, and I drove down to Ty, and like I say, basically I was right next to George for the time that he was in Ticonderoga. And actually, it turned out that George and I had a great time. We both like older musicals, and in between shots, we would start singing songs from South Pacific, Showboat, whatever. And I can't say that anyone else on the crew, well, the crew is much younger than George and myself. So the songs we were singing, they most likely never even heard of. But Somewhere in my computer, I think I do have a video of George and I singing, which, again, it was a wonderful time on the set.
And I wanted to say for our listeners out there, John Lim and Andy Bray wrote a book called Making Fake Star Trek, and they made a second book called Making More Fake Star Trek, which centers on the episodes that Leslie's talking about right now, because Andy Bray played Chekhov and John Lim played Sulu. And the first episode that they did was a Chekhov episode where Chekhov aged and died. And then the second one was a Sulu episode where he goes through time. And both of them were filmed in Ticonderoga. And both of them, you can read about them in great length and detail in Making Fake Star Trek and Making More Fake Star Trek by John Lim and Andy Bray. So check them out. You can get them on Amazon. We've had them on the show several times. They are great guys. They're funny. They're knowledgeable. And check out their book if you're looking for something to read. So I just wanted to get a little plug in there for them. I've never worked with George professionally. But I do have a couple of stories from conventions. Well, one wasn't from a convention. My wife, a girlfriend at the time, and I went on Sea Trek in 1991. And I went on Sea Trek because I wanted to meet some of the stars and get some contact information for my conventions and stuff. So what better way to do it than on a cruise? So we went on the cruise. And every morning at 5 a.m., George would be jogging around the upper deck, the I don't know what you call it, the exposed deck. I'm not a ship person, but you know, the deck where you're outside, you know, the upper deck as opposed to the lower deck. And every morning at 5 o'clock, he'd be up there jogging, and I would get up for breakfast, and I'd see him, and I'd say, "Hey, George." He'd say hi, and he's a friendly guy. I wasn't jogging with him, though, so that's not my scene. But he was cool. But I did see him at a non-Star Trek convention. They were doing a political rally at RPI in Troy, New York, and he was one of the guest speakers to talk about politics and minorities. You know, how you go about getting into politics and how you can make changes and all these different things. And so I was there dressed up as a Klingon, and we got there really early, me and a couple of our friends, and we had on our Star Trek uniforms, and we're sitting right in the front row. And they came out and were doing all their boring political stuff and analysis, which was so boring. But then George came out. They introduced George. And we all stood up and were cheering and cheering and clapping. And George gave his little intro. And he says, "Before we get started, there's a couple of people here that I think have a couple of questions I want to get out of the way first." And he pointed to us. And we got to ask him some questions about Star Trek at a political rally. It was so awesome. And then after it was all over, we met him out in the lobby. And he talked to us for a couple of minutes, and he told us that Star Trek follows him everywhere he goes. No matter what he does or where he goes, there's always a Star Trek fan there, and he always takes the time to acknowledge them. And I thought that was cool. I just thought that was just the greatest thing in the world. And I saw him in – when did Star Trek VI come out? That was 1991 as well. Yeah, I think that was. They had this thing called Sit Long and Prosper. And for the 25th anniversary of Star Trek, they played all six of the Star Trek movies back to back to back to back to back to back. And one of our local movie theaters had George there as a guest. And they had a little mini Star Trek convention in the lobby. They had dealers set up, and they wanted some people there in costumes. So, of course, I went as a Klingon. And I had a Star Trek VI poster, and I went up and had George sign it for me, and he signed it to Jim. "Some of my best friends are Klingons." And that poster is hanging on my wall to this day. It's one of the prizes of my Star Trek collection. And George is just a grateful, friendly, awesome guy. I can't say enough good things about him, Leslie.
Well, going into, I mean, there are two things about George that it's amazing how friendly and nice he is, because he's of Japanese descent, and during World War II, the government seized his parents' house and put them in a concentration camp. I mean, you know, United States does not want to talk about concentration camps. I think they call them internment camps. They were concentration camps. There was barbed wire around these things. And that's how he grew up as a child, in a concentration camp in the United States, land of the free, unless you happen to be at war with Japan.
And George, about that. I think he wrote a book about it, too, I believe. I think.
I don't know. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, but, you know, once the war was over and they released the I don't know what to call them. I mean, the people that were in the concentration camp, their houses were gone. Their possessions were gone. I mean, you're free. The war's over. You're free. By the way, you don't have a house anymore. I mean, so his family had to start over again. I mean, that could make a very bitter person. I mean, like you say, George has overcome so many things. So like you say, as a child, he was brought up in a concentration camp. Then I don't know at what point he came out, but that he is gay. And it was really strange. In California, there was like, for some reason, there was like maybe 6 weeks or something that they were allowing gay marriages, and Brad and George quickly got married. And then all of a sudden, California decides that there aren't going to be gay marriages anymore. So here they got married, and then all these other people behind them, you know, when I'm saying that figuratively, suddenly it's illegal again. You can't get married. And then they changed their mind again, and then they opened up that gay people could get married. But I don't know. I'm making a left-hand turn here, is that I remember when I was on the board of the Screen Actors Guild, the problem wasn't a matter of gays getting married, or let me put it this way. The problem of gay couples was they were not being recognized. And let's say one of the members was sick and in the hospital, the other partner could not legally see that sick person because they were not considered part of the family, because they were not married.
Exactly.
Also, the health plan, at least with the Screen Actors Guild. If you're man and wife, the wife or the husband, depending on if you're the actor or the actress, would be covered by the health plan. But if you're a gay couple and you're not married, you could not put on your companion, whatever you want to call them, as underneath your health plan. So for all the money that George was making on Star Trek and the Star Trek movies in the very beginning, he couldn't put Brad on his health plan. I mean, it only was allowed once California allowed them to get married. Then Brad was able to be underneath the health plan. So that, you know, people, even today, they're still arguing whether women can marry women, men can marry men, you know, the whole thing. But it, besides that, it's making a commitment. There are, boy, I wish I could think of the right word. There are technical things that the government has created that if you don't have that piece of paper, like, well, I'm repeating myself now. If you don't have that piece of paper, and let's say your better half, whatever you want to call them, is in the hospital dying of cancer or something, you legally can't go in there.
That's
because
right.
Because you don't have a piece of paper saying that, you know, your husband and husband or wife and wife or whatever you want to call it. And like you say, I'm repeating myself, is you may have been living with this person for 20 years and you can't cover them under your health plan. I mean,
right.
That was a major reason why they wanted to legalize marriage. You know, I mean, I remember that originally they were trying to come up with, well, we'll recognize you as companions. Well, that still didn't allow the law to cover you. It wasn't a matter of a piece of paper saying, okay, you're legally companions. It was a piece of paper that was allowing you to visit your loved one in the hospital or, like I say, I'm picking on cancer, if your loved one needs chemotherapy, you know, you're helping your health plan would cover them. That's why, I mean, like I say, there is the commitment, but there was the, I wish I could think of the right word, is that because of the government, there was financial, or I hate to say financial, it's like you say, it's the other coverage, or let's say your loved one dies, and I mean, technically, if you were man and wife, automatically it would go to the wife or it would go to the husband if you didn't have a will. But let's say you're man and man, and your loved one dies, and for some reason you don't have a will, the family could come in as vultures, and like I say, you could have been living with this person for 20 years, and you would have no rights to the house that you lived in for 20 years with your companion. So, like I say, it just wasn't a matter of a commitment of love. It just was so wrong. I mean,
it was.
You know, there are gay marriages that have lasted longer than heterosexual marriages.
I looked up the title of that book, and it's called "They Called Us Enemies." And Google Books says, New York Times best-selling graphic memoir from actor, author, activist George Takei returns in a deluxe edition, experience the forces that shaped an American icon and America itself in this gripping tale of courage, country, loyalty, and love. Available on Google Books. So that's the name of it if you guys want to check that out. By George himself about his experiences.
That almost sounds like it covers his whole life then.
I think it just covers his life in the internment camp, I think. I don't know. I haven't read it, but it might. I'm not sure. Maybe it does. But anyways, yeah, so we're just about out of time, Leslie.
Yeah, I know I got up on a soapbox, but sorry about that. But I mean, George deserves all the love
Was he ever on Planet of the Apes, is my question. I don't know. Was George ever on Planet of the Apes?
Right. Too bad that he wasn't on the planet. Sorry, he wasn't on Planet of the Apes, but he did do a lot of other shows, but he will always be Sulu to I think the public.
Yeah, and speaking
unless
of,
they're going to make a Planet of the Apes with. Well, actually, that's an interesting thing. I wonder if he ever voiced any of the Planet of the Apes. I think I would have to look up, but I don't think so.
I just wanted to say one thing in closing about George. When J.J. Abrams was making Star Trek Beyond in 2016, there's a scene in the movie where Sulu lands at space station, at the Yorktown Space Station, and he gets off of the Enterprise and goes to and picks up his daughter, Damora, and his husband is there waiting for him. And they made the Sulu character gay in the movie as an homage to George, and George was really upset about that. George didn't like that because George felt that it changed the character and made the character into something that it wasn't. And I respect that, but I just want to, I cannot think of a single time when it was determined on Star Trek, I don't even think they were dealing with homosexuality back in the 60s, Leslie, were they?
Oh,
I don't recall.
There is no way in the 60s that they would have an openly gay person in Star Trek. I mean, that again, that's what's so amazing about Discovery up in Canada. I mean, anything goes now with Discovery, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way, that they are representing everybody now.
And I just wanted to let everybody know that the Discovery is filming season 4 right now in Toronto, and COVID has struck, and now they've shut down filming for the next 2 weeks just to make sure everything is okay. And then they'll resume filming, I think, May 6th or 7th, I believe it was. So Discovery is still in the works, and Picard is also filming. So we're going to have some live Star Trek coming up soon. We also have Lower Decks to look forward to and Star Trek Prodigy, the new animated series with Kate Mulgrew. So got a lot of Star Trek to look forward to. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But, Leslie, we are out of time. Believe it or not,
we just breathe through these hours.
They just fly right by, don't they? But listen, guys, please visit us at the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. Say hello to Leslie; she'd love to hear from you. And check out Trek Talking on Thursday night with myself and my Trek experts. And you know. Who knows? Maybe we'll have Leslie on Trek Talking with us as a guest host if Leslie's available, and she can hang out with us, talk about Discovery, talk about Picard, talk about Lower Decks in the meantime. And please don't worry. I promise you Stunt Treks will return with a vengeance. The Wrath of Leslie.
What'd you say? The Wrath of Leslie?
Yes.
Sounds good to me.
We will definitely be back.
If things would settle down here, hopefully I could start calling in on Thursday. It's... again, it's personal issues of the care of my mother, and it eats up my week. I mean, but hopefully I can call in on Thursday and at least say hello.
That's completely understandable, and you know, hopefully we'll have some new Star Trek coming out soon and everything will be back to normal. Hopefully COVID is going to stop rearing its ugly head. We can get back to some conventions and we can start living our lives again. Hopefully we can all live long and prosper. That would be preferable. So we're out of time, Leslie. I got to say thank you so much because we couldn't do Stunt Treks without the one and only Leslie Hoffman. So thank you for hanging out and talking about George with me tonight. It was fun as always.
Thank you for allowing me to do Stunt Trek. I mean, I'm gonna, as you say, I've come 4 months from now, I'm gonna be out of my mind. So yes, I guess I will be calling in on Thursday, and definitely people are more than welcome to ask questions on the appreciation page. Like I say, it's going to be 4 months. So please write to me.
Yeah, we'll be back, though. Don't you guys worry. We definitely will be back. I'll be up at my camp up in Lake George having a great time. I'm there from Friday to Sunday every week for the whole summer. So I'll be up there. But hey, maybe Leslie can shoot down and hang out at camp with us for a little while. I don't know. But we're not going away, so don't worry. We will be back. Okay, so make sure that you realize that we are coming back. We're just taking a little vacation for the summer. That's all. So anyways, I'm your co-host, Uncle Jim. You guys can hang out with me on Thursday night, Trek Talking. We're going to have Victoria Fox on with us Thursday night. She's the director of the new Star Trek fan film, Avalon. She also works, Interlude. From the Avalon universe, and she's going to be hanging out with us talking about Star Trek fan films. So you guys check that out if you're interested. And you can also find me at Trek Talking and Beyond on Facebook as well. So please, everybody, I want you to stay safe and be good to each other and come back and check out Stunt Treks in a couple of months when summer's over. We'll be back with more great stories. We'll talk about Planet of the Apes and we'll have a lot of fun. Actually, Top Gun Maverick is coming out this summer, and we can have who is that guy that was on last time, Leslie? The graphic artist who worked on Top Gun. I can't remember his name. Your friend.
Oh, Matt Boardman. Right, you know what movie he's doing, and you seemed real excited about that one. So
yeah.
In
Top Gun Maverick.
When does that movie come out?
They pushed it back to October. So
we'll definitely have it on. We'll have him back on after the movie comes out.
Yeah, because he said he couldn't talk about it, but he said we're going to love it. If you like the original Top Gun, you'll love this one. And he worked on all the jet planes and all the battle sequences and everything. So I'm really excited about, you know, having him on the show when he can talk about it. So keep that in mind. That's something to look forward to. And anyways, the lady's whispering in my ear that we have less than 60 seconds before she cuts us off, so... I want to say good night. Thank you to everybody. And come back at the end of the summer. Leslie and I will be back with more fun. So everybody be good to each other. Good night. And hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, Leslie.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.